Obama and McCain come down on the opposite side again and again. And look at our website, you will see what's on Nader Gonzalez's table and what's off the table for the corporate candidates, Obama and McCain. They haven't even come out for a comprehensive tax system that first taxes things we like the least or dislike the most as a society before we tax human labor. What are we doing taxing human labor first before we tax security derivative speculation, the gambling industries, the addictive industries, the corporate criminals, and the polluters? I mean, aren't those things we want to diminish? So one way to diminish them is to tax them. And to show you what Chris Dodd didn't tell you is that he could, and Barney Frank could, because Washington had Wall Street over a barrel in the last 2 weeks. They could have gotten anything on that bill because Wall Street wanted to be bailed out. But what happened? Wall Street had Washington on the barrel, and the way it ended, Wall Street put Washington in the barrel and rolled it. So here's what they could have said. Okay, you want $700 billion, Wall Street? We're going to make you pay for it. How? Well, we're going to have a 0.1% tax on $500 trillion of derivatives transactions this year, and that's $500 billion. And it's $500 or so billion next year, too. And after they finish paying for their own bailout and dampening some of that speculation, we'll use that money to rebuild the public works, for health insurance, for renovating this, constructing that, that benefits the people of our country. Now, isn't that something that is absolutely logical to do? You want to be bailed out, you be a bailout yourself. Now, I'll point out how unfair it is. Here in Connecticut, what's your sales tax, 6 or 7? 6%. You walk into a store here and you buy pretty necessary things. You buy clothing, you buy appliances, you buy furniture, you pay 6%. Now, Monday morning, someone on Wall Street buys $100 million of Exxon derivatives, pays nothing, no sales tax. Is that fair? See what I mean? This is why we have to do our homework. We have to spend more time on our political and civic responsibilities, because once we do, you won't have to have people like me and Dave and others running for office here that you heard exhort you. You will be exhorting us. We will be following you. You will be pushing us with your moral indignation, your sense of unfairness, and the kind of country you want to turn around for your children and your grandchildren. That's what we have to do in politics. So I put out a statement yesterday inviting the taxpayers of America to summon their senators and representatives who are on their way back here for the election period and say, we want you to meet in public auditoriums like this, and we want you to explain yourself on that vote, and we want to be ready to ask you questions. And don't think you're going to schmooze us or mislead us. Because we're going to have in this audience people who know that bill backwards and forwards and who know what you did, what you didn't do, what you should do, and what you shouldn't have done. And you're going to be here, and here's the time, right here, Senator Dodd, right here, Senator Lieberman, right here, whatever negative vote, whatever yes vote from your delegation. I think it's only one. Joe Courtney is the only one who voted against it. All the others, they either voted for on the first round a week ago, or they switched their vote. John Larson voted for it. Chris Murphy voted for it. Harold Burbank's running for Chris Murphy's seat, and he knows what Murphy did inside out on this and other votes in his young political career when he's turned into sort of a pet puppy of the Democratic leadership in the House, Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer. Let's just have this kind of perspective. 220 years ago, we were 13 colonies dominated by King George III. 220 years later, we are 50 colonies dominated by King George IV, and we have taxation without representation. We're right back to where we started. To illustrate what happens when we stop having low expectation levels from our political system, and you've seen it, it's called cynicism. Pox on all, they're all corrupt. And the person who says that sort of feels sophisticated, you know? Doesn't quite know there are two easy ways to go through life, to believe everything or to believe nothing. Both of them avoid thinking. And so the cynics, of which there's an ample supply in every country against their political system, withdraw. The skeptic resurges. That's the difference. Now, when we withdraw, we lower our expectation levels. They're such crooks, can't expect them to do anything for the people. Let's just run our own personal lives and forget these guys. Once your expectation level goes down, your country goes down. It's a perfect correlation. Watch. Eugene Debs, how many people remember Eugene? Eugene Debs, a great labor leader, late 19th and 20th century. And he pulled off the Pullman Railroad strike. This is incredible. Huge rallies. He once took a train to Chicago to address workers in an open field. 200,000 showed up. This was without email. At any rate, he was asked at the end of his career by a reporter, "Mr. Debs, what's your greatest regret?" He said, "My greatest regret?" He said, "My greatest regret is the American people under our Constitution can have almost anything they want, but it just seems like they don't want much of anything at all." Just think of that. That's low expectation level. Fast forward to the end of World War II, the U.S. is the colossus, most powerful economic, military, technological power in the world. At the same time in Western Europe, the cities were in rubble. The countryside destitute, poverty, starvation, disease reigned, economies collapsed. Starting in 1945, the people of Western Europe, through their trade unions, their cooperatives, their multi-party system, not two-party, multi-party system, their proportional representation, instant runoff voting, demanded and received by law for all their people universal health care, decent wages, decent pensions, decent public transit. They demanded and received university-free tuition. They got paid maternity leave, paid family sick leave. They got 4 weeks paid vacation for all their people. They got decent daycare. 63 years later, in the United States, land of the free, home of the brave, huge economy. None of these have been established in law for all our people. And tens of thousands of people are dying every year as a result from just not having health insurance, for example. And thousands of people are getting sick, and hundreds of thousands of people are basically on the verge of destitution. And we have 100 million people who can be called poor in this country. And they work hard, and you do the most dangerous work and the dirtiest work, and they're marginalized, and they're excluded, and they're underpaid, and they're overcharged. The poor get ripped off more. The poor die earlier, and most of them are uninsured. And the only time we seem to like and want them is when we send them to fight our criminal wars overseas. Look at the pictures of the dead soldiers. White, poor whites, Latinos, African Americans. That's who fight our wars. Having said that, isn't that a good yardstick to value the Democrat-Republican Party? These are the basic social benefits of a civilized society. We have a hugely productive society. It's just not distributed. It's not distributed to the people who really produce the sweat on their brow and work every day. And so look, the Republican-Democratic Party, unlike in Europe, they didn't deliver in the 40s. They didn't deliver these in the 50s and 60s and 70s. They didn't deliver in the 80s and the 90s. And in this decade, How many more years, how many more decades are we going to give them so they can prove to us that they're not going to deliver? So they can prove to us that one is slightly less bad than the other, therefore you have to vote for the least worst. And for heaven's sake, don't make any demands on your least worst presidential nominee like John Kerry. Don't make any demands, because you might upset Kerry because he wants to out-hawk Bush on Iraq and send more soldiers there. And he wouldn't have pulled out of Fallujah, he said to Bush on the first debate. And so this merry-go-round every 4 years, least worst. Your spoilers, your third parties, your independent candidates, least, go for the least worst, and every 4 years the least worst candidate can take you for granted because he knows that you're not going to go for the worst. So he doesn't even have to give you anything. He doesn't even have to look back. He goes and becomes more to the right wing and more to the corporate, trying to shave off a few votes from the right side and more money from the corporate side. And every 4 years, it's Mondale, it's Dukakis, it's Clinton, it's Gore, it's Kerry, now it's Obama, and they all moved to the right, and the corporate, and they all lost except Clinton, who was saved by Ross Perot. So it isn't exactly a winning strategy for the Democratic Party, is it? The Democratic Party has become very good at electing very bad Republicans. Now, let's look at ourselves as a people, because it's only we, the people, are going to change things. Nobody's going to give it to you. Throughout history, the powers that be have fought the great advances of social justice that the people have pushed forward. That's clear. So it's us. Can't pawn it off on anyone else. Not only that, we outnumber them. Not only that, we have far more votes than they. Not only that, we care more about our children and grandchildren. A corporation is not a human being. It is an entity. It should never be given the constitutional rights of real human beings. It doesn't vote. It doesn't have children. It doesn't die in Iraq. It makes money in Iraq. We're not talking about the employees. We're talking about the corporate entity. By a Supreme Court decision, 1886, a rogue decision, gave the railroad the right as a person under our Constitution. And then the courts just elaborated that. So how can you have equal justice under the law, I ask you, between you and General Motors, you and Pfizer, you and the Bank of America, you and ExxonMobil? It's not possible. We have to strip them of their constitutional right to lobby, to engage in politics, and to finance elections. They should be aced out completely of that system. Constitutional rights. Constitutional rights are only for human beings. You want to test that as a poll? Huh? How many people in this country think constitutional rights should be given to non-human beings? I don't mean animals. I mean legal entities created by lawyers. See, investors don't create corporations. They fund them. Corporations are chartered by state government, like Delaware, New York, Connecticut. And that charter can be conditioned. That charter can be conditioned to accommodate the rights and necessities of real human beings. Now, here's the essential, shall we say, misunderstanding of freedom by a lot of people in this country. Cicero, the ancient Roman orator and lawyer, 2,100 or so years ago, defined freedom this way. Freedom is participation in power. Isn't that a great definition? What did he mean? He meant civic freedom. He meant civic freedom to shape your society. He didn't mean personal freedom. And too many people in this country confuse personal freedom with civic freedom. For example, we can eat what we want, buy whatever clothes we want, date who we want, marry who we want, divorce who we want, work where we want, travel where we want, have the hobbies we want, fly whatever kites we want, get into 4,000-pound vehicles and go 3 blocks to buy Chiclets if we want. Okay? Watch whatever movies we want, use the clicker to turn on all the TV programs we don't like. That is not civic freedom. I've been to dictatorships, as I'm sure you have, touring or whatever. They have a lot, quite a bit of personal freedom as long as they stay out of politics. They can eat what they want, date who they want, marry who they want, travel where they want, have hobbies if they want, go hunting and fishing if they want. We do have more personal freedom than people have in dictatorships because they're poorer. But what about our civic freedom? What is our civic freedom to shape our tax laws, to decide whether we go to war or not? Our civic freedom to recall our representatives and replace them because we would have a competitive democracy with a lot of other party candidates and proportional representation and public funding of public elections. I mean, what is there anything left for us to decide in America other than our personal lives under growing constraints? Is there anything left for us to decide? The great questions, the uses of technology, biotechnology, nanotechnology, those companies are going hell-bent for leather. And they're not telling us what the risks are. They're not telling us what the costs are. They're just boosting their definition of benefits for their profit and loss statement. And once we clarify that because we have personal freedom, doesn't mean we really have the fundamental freedom of citizens in terms of self-governance, in terms of defining our own priorities, in terms of allocating our own public budgets, instead of having the corporation allocate your tax dollars to subsidies, bailouts, handouts, giveaways to the corporation or to the military-industrial complex. Once we decide that there are two separate worlds here, personal freedom, maybe we'll spend more time demonstrating our civic freedom. Maybe our students will learn how to work civic freedom. Maybe our students will have their expectation levels higher than ours in terms of what our political system should be delivering, in terms of what our corporate system should be delivering, in terms of other models of economic development, often called sustainable economies or renewable energy or organic agriculture. Well, let me just end on this note, and then we'll have a good discussion. But two points. I want to thank Harold Burbank, Gail Weed, James Eaton, and Pete Elner for their volunteer effort in this whole state, making this four stops today in my native state possible and successful, and all the other volunteers. And right here, especially UConn for Nader. That's good. That's good. Thank you. I hope they have another title, UConn for themselves, too. I'm going to invite up here, one of the reasons we're doing this campaign is to bring the young generation into having an appetite for clean politics and political skills and organizing skills and running for, in a few years, for local state office. And an example of that younger generation is Matt Zawiski, who's from Buffalo, from a blue-collar family, and he has been with us for 7 years as an organizer, so balancing a lot of things on the road in very fast and complex situations. And he has some things to say to bring you up to date and to show you, invite you, how you can help us even more than you've helped us now. But I want to, before I have him on, I want to give you one short story, and that is in thanking people around the country who support us. We received one day a $1,300 contribution from a 64-year-old Vietnam vet who was suffering from Agent Orange disease, you know, the chemical warfare over in Vietnam that actually got our own soldiers, boomeranged on our own soldiers. And I said, thank you very much for contributing to us. And he said, I didn't contribute it to you. I contributed it to the kind of country I want us to be. I went like this, like, wow, this reminds me of my father, who would say, you're not giving to charity, you're giving to your own community, betterment. And it's that's the kind of, shall we say, irreverent attitude that really extends the trusteeship to us and really makes us not just humble in that sense, but it makes us very sensitive to where our money comes from and how frugally we use it. and we take no money from commercial interests, and we take no money from political action committees. So I will be back after Matt gets through making his presentation, and it's Matt Zawiski. Now we can have a good discussion. Thank you.